Welcome back to the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show. You got some problems with yellow jackets? We got the tool that will help you rid them off your property.
Yeah, during these end of summer months, early fall, when it's a little bit dry, you'll notice more aggressive yellow jackets flying around. Yellow jackets are looking for your barbecue meat, sweet drinks, as well as water sources. You can keep them at bay with the rescue water rescue yellow jacket traps. Rescue yellow jacket traps are an eco-friendly do-it-yourself option to help keep these damaging, stinging pets away from you. These traps use a powerful lure for yellow jackets and will not attract beneficial honeybees. All rescue products are made in the USA. You can go to rescue.com to find all sorts of great rescue pest control products. That's rescue.com, made in the USA.
Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Amy Andruhovich is a passionate, all-about gardening person, indoors and out. She really enjoys providing the best gardening knowledge through her website, YouTube videos, and she has a new book out called Vertical Vegetables. Welcome to the program, Amy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, we thank you for taking time out of your day to join not only Holly and myself, but educating all of us across the country. And I want to start with this. Many, as we're getting closer to cold weather in the more northern portions of the United States, what are some budget-friendly ways that we can put our garden away or to bed for those who want to until spring next year? What can you advise us on?
Well, I tell you what, my best budget-friendly tip for winterizing your garden in the fall is to pile on the leaves. And I think every seasoned gardener would tell you the same thing. You don't need to remove them from your flower bed. Some people think they need to clean them out of the flowers. Nope, just leave them right in there. They're great insulation against the cold, and they also feed the soil and the plants as they break down. And you can also use them to cover your vegetable beds. So whenever I'm raking or mowing up the leaves, I just dump them right over the top of the beds, and you can turn them into the soil if you want, or just leave them in, you know, on as a winter mulch. They're great for attracting earthworms, feeding the soil as they break down, and it's basically free fertilizer.
Where do you think that mindset comes from where, oh, it's in the flower bed, we've got to get it cleaned up? Is it more of a aesthetic type of mindset that, oh, we've got to keep it pretty rather than just leave them alone? Or you know, where does that come from?
Yeah, I think I definitely think that's it. Is people think, you know, they have the mindset of they need to clean those leaves up off of their grass, otherwise the grass could die over the winter. But they think the same thing about their flower beds. Plus, they look ugly when the leaves are all piled in the garden. Some people can think they look ugly, and I think that's definitely where that mindset comes from. Is, you know, I got to do my fall cleanup, which means I've got to clean up all the leaves, and then all those leaves go to waste in the landfill, where they are very beneficial to our gardens, and they usually break down, you know, early on in the spring, and they're gone. You won't even remember they were there.
Very true. So we all deal with Japanese beetles, it seems. What's your best methods for handling them?
My top way of handling them is I spray beneficial nematodes in my yard every spring and fall. And what those are is those are completely harmless, microscopic organisms that you'll never see. They live in the soil, and they feed on grub worms, which are one of the one type of grub worm is the Japanese beetle larva. And so those help to kill and control Japanese beetles. And they also are the beneficial nematodes also help with other harmful beetles and caterpillars and things, other pests that like to eat our plants, and they help with those as well. So you're getting kind of a double bonus there. I also hand pick the beetles off of my plants in the summertime and drop them into a bucket of soapy water. But I tell you what, I used to stress out about that, and I used to be out there with that bucket every single night. But I've really learned to live with them over the years, and I'm not as diligent about picking them. It's very stressful, and it's not a very fun job. You know, Japanese beetles rarely kill, a mature, healthy plant. So they're just ugly nuisance. You know, they're an ugly nuisance, and so sometimes it's better just to learn to kind of live with them a little bit.
Yeah, when I moved up here with Holly, 2010-ish. I'm from Southern Illinois. We had them for years. And then when we moved up here, never saw one for 3, 4, 5 years. And now they're up here, central Wisconsin as well, just like every other insect or rodent or animal. It's migrating north. So if you haven't got them, you will get them. And if you haven't got them, be happy right now because they will come.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I remember the days before Japanese beetles. It was so wonderful.
Yeah. Let's talk about your new book, Vertical Vegetables. What is something intriguing our listeners would find and that you can encourage them when they pick up a book?
Well, the book is it's really a complete guide to everything you need to know about growing growing your vegetables vertically, and really anybody can use vertical gardening, no matter how big or small your garden is. You know, I teach you in the book. I teach you everything from the benefits of vertical gardening, different techniques you can use. I give you design tips and tons of ideas, beautiful pictures. How to choose the right structure for your plants, and then even go into how to care for them, things like pests, like Japanese beetles and other, watering and weeding and things like that. And then in addition to all of that information, I also designed and built 23 unique and beautiful projects and I give you the full instructions and all the step-by-step, everything with pictures so that you can take those and build those in your own garden to get you started.
And I think a lot of people, maybe in more rural areas like I was on the farm, the only thing we ever trellised was peas, because if you didn't trellis peas, they fell over and you didn't have anything. Until I moved to the quote-unquote city, when space was a premium, then you figured out, wow, if I grow everything vertical, get a lot more in a small area, and in some aspects, by growing vertical, the plant actually produces more than if it was just sprawling on the ground.
Yep, they produce more, they're healthier, it's easier to weed and water and maintain them, for sure, and plus they look spectacular.
And easier to pick those cucumbers. You don't find one the size of a football that's always hiding somewhere.
That's right.
So, many people are afraid of failing. If they want to start a garden, they think that they have to be perfect at it right away. What are your top three reasons to convince somebody that they may be on the fence about starting a garden? And what would you say if they feel they might fail?
Well, first of all, nobody was born with a green thumb. No matter what they tell you, they were not born with that green thumb. So don't be intimidated. Everybody has to start somewhere, just like everything else in life, right? You have to learn as you go. Number two, I would say anybody can be a gardener. You really just have to dig in. And as I said, learn as you go, and you're going to make mistakes. Number three, there's no doubt you're going to have some failures. Mother Nature can be brutal. Japanese beetles is one example. But you're going to have more successes than you do failures. And I tell you what, when you bite into your first garden fresh tomato, or you see that first flower blooming that you planted, you'll forget all about the failures and you'll just be thrilled with the successes.
And just like anything, whether you're golfing or you're building a car, you got to do it in order to learn about what you're doing in order to make it good. And you may have seen it on your end at the beginning of the pandemic. Everybody decided, hey, let's plant a garden. And I don't know, and I don't have the statistics in front of me, but I don't know if that, if we had 50% return back this year or whatever, since the world has quote unquote got back to normal. But I think a lot of people had failures that first year and was like, well, since everything's back to normal, quote unquote, we're just not going to do a garden this year. And I think they've missed out on a lot of things because of that.
Absolutely. You're definitely going to learn more. I mean, take it as a positive. You're going to learn more from your failures than you will from your successes. So,
right. Well, you love growing succulents. Some people think that that's hard to they're hard to maintain. What are some good succulent growing tips for people? And whenever people decide to get one, whether it's a grocery store or the garden center, what is the ideal conditions to keep it growing the way you see it in the magazines and the TV shows?
Yeah, from my experience, the number one mistake that people make, the number one thing they do wrong with succulents is overwatering them. So my best tips are to make sure that you plant them in a sandy, fast draining soil And always use a pot with drainage holes. Don't use a pot that's, you know, a glass jar or something like that. I see people using those without any drainage holes. That's a recipe for failure. And then always let the soil dry out completely between waterings. It shouldn't be any moisture left in that soil before you water it again. And once you get the hang of it and you know, keeping them on the dry side, then, you know, they really are very easy to grow.
Now, for people who may be questioning how dry is dry, would you recommend getting a moisture meter to assist them in making that decision?
Yes, a moisture. I recommend that to everybody. The moisture meter is a really brainless way, easy way. Is a probe that you just stick right down into the soil, and it shows you right there how much moisture is in that soil. You don't have to get your fingers dirty by sticking them down into the dirt or anything like that. So, yes, absolutely. They're very inexpensive to buy, and you can find them anywhere.
That's really great information. And with succulents now, I know, like, for example, my houseplants I might water once a week. I think succulents, is it less than that usually, or what's kind of the schedule for that?
Yeah, absolutely. Less than once a week. In the wintertime, my larger, more established succulents, I don't think I even water them through the whole winter because they do go into a semi-dormant state. Most of them do during the wintertime, so they don't need as much water, especially if you bring them inside the house. So yeah, definitely, you know, use that soil moisture gauge or use your finger to stick that 1 inch into the soil to feel for the moisture. I never recommend watering on a schedule, but if you want to do weekly with your other plants, just check the soil and see if it's dry. And if it's dry, add more water. But I tell you, most of the larger ones, you're probably going to find that you're not going to need to water them more than maybe once a month or so.
Right. I want to go back to the vertical gardening book that you've got out. Whenever you were creating this book, was there a, whoa, I didn't know you could grow this on a trellis experience? Or did everything that you put in the book, was it stuff that you had already knew would grow very well, et cetera, that like that?
Yeah, I've been growing vertically most of my gardening career, most of my life, and have experimented with every single kind of vegetable that you could possibly imagine growing vertically, whether it be vines. And you can do more than just vines on a trellis. You've got, you know, think outside of the box, think about, you know, tower gardens and raised, you know, raised gardens and containers of all sorts hanging. You could grow just about anything in a container, as long as the container's big enough and the vertical structure is strong enough. You know, you can grow anything. And so the book really came out of, you know, everything in there is from my experience and plants that I've experimented with and grown myself in my own garden and even in the projects that I built.
Well, Amy, we greatly appreciate the time you've offered us. How can people find more out about you and get a hold of that book?
Oh, the best place to start is my website, getbusygardening.com. I say that a little too fast sometimes. That's the best place to start. There's a wealth of information there, and you can find my book for sale, and you can also learn more about me. And, of course, you can also find me as Get Busy Gardening on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, YouTube. And you can also sign up for my weekly newsletter on my website, and that gets sent to your straight gardening tips straight to your inbox.
Well, Amy, we greatly appreciate the time and the knowledge you've unleashed on Holly and myself when it comes to vertical gardening.
Yes, you're welcome.
Thank you.
For more information, please visit thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.